I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Finger Poppin' Time by Hank Ballard and the Midnighters. Also the name of and theme for one of my college radio shows. But Hank Ballard, born on this day in 1927.
All right, so the Grizzlies get the split over the weekend, which you would have hoped when you saw that Jokic was going to be out. But let's start Friday when they lose to the Warriors. And you just got to look at the three-point shooting in that game, 7 of 42, 16 at 0.7%, and that was sort of that. But thoughts on what transpired out of the Bay?
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to shoot like that on the road against Golden State and get a win. And, you know, they fought back late and made it close, but that's probably a little misleading. You know, I think, I mean, that game, you look at the shooting disparity, but I think for the season as a whole, it's sort of hard to get a beat on the Grizzlies because, on one hand, you know, they're 8-6, even though they've only had one full game of their three best players together, and they're a top 10, they have a top 10 unit on both ends of the court. On the other hand, like, the schedule has been super easy, and they've caught a lot of breaks. And so they've really only beaten one good team that had its stars, and that was Orlando on opening night here.
Yeah, it's interesting. Everyone's catching breaks because everybody's hurt.
That's why it's hard to get a beat.
Yeah. People are catching breaks when they play the Grizzlies, too, because they're playing them without Ja Morant. Do you, by the way, have any thoughts on the injuries, the schedule, all of this? Like, at some point, the NBA came out and said that load management doesn't work. Like, they some study, you know, as they tried to ramp up how many games teams play. What do you make of what we are seeing across the league with the injuries?
I wonder if an underrated component of it isn't the style of play. When you combine the schedule with the style of play, like, you know, I know the myth is always, like, people played harder in the past. Everyone always thinks the past was better and people played harder and no one plays defense in the NBA and there's all this stuff.
Right.
I bet if you look and, like, you know, the tracking stuff they do now, that'll show, like, how many miles you move during a game or whatever. I bet if you apply that to, like, you know, the 80s and the 70s and the 90s, I think players are taxed more now. I think because the game's so spread out, there's more ground to cover. The pace is higher. I think it's a more high-impact game, and there's just more asked of players within the context of games. There's less standing around while the ball's in the post and everyone stands around waiting for the kick out, you know? I just think on both ends of the floor, players move more, they're asked to do more, guys have become more athletic. And I think you combine that with the 82-game schedule, I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, the load management stuff, on one hand, it's sort of intuitive that, you know, that the more you play, you would wear down, you would get hurt more. But I also think that, like, a lot of injuries just are not, like, John Morant's injuries are not really about that, or don't seem to be, right? They're incident-related injuries. It almost feels like, you know, if that's how the injuries are happening with him, like, why shortchange yourself when he is available, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, interesting point. Like, John Starks and Patrick Ewing were not moving up and down the court as much as the Grizzlies are. Do we know just from baseline, have you seen, like, is it only anecdotal that it feels like there's more injuries, or are there more injuries? Have you seen any reliable?
I mean, I don't have, like, a study in front of me. I want to say that I have read that the injury rate is increased. The absence, the injury rate is increased over the last couple of seasons. I mean, part of that may be more injuries. Part of that may be that teams are more likely to set guys with nagging stuff that they played through in the past. It's sort of hard to pick all that apart.
Right. Yeah. And it is interesting. Like, I don't object at all, given that my interest is in the Grizzlies winning basketball games, to Jokic not playing. And that was personal reasons, whatever that means. But it is less of an enterprise. It's just less of an event. Like, and certainly from a global NBA perspective, it is much less appealing when you don't have Jokic on that team. Because without Jokic, and then no Aaron Gordon either. That's a pretty diminished team. So the other thing that interesting happened Friday was you've got Bane back, you've got Vince back, you got Marcus Smart, who had already been back and was played in that one too. And the starting lineup was Jackson, Santi, Pippen, Brandon Clark, and Wells. And then Sunday, you had Bane coming in for Santi, but Wells still starting. What do you make of what he's doing with the starting lineup, and where do you imagine it might go from here?
Yeah, this is the subject I wrote about in my sort of my weekly column that'll go up later this morning, probably a little bit. I wrote a little bit about just sort of the general, it seems like a topic that won't go away, but I feel like it stays the topic in terms of how the depth of the rotation and how he uses it. But I also wrote up specifically about the question at small forward, which to me, sort of as you get players back, there are more decisions to be made, which Taylor Jenkins alluded to. And to me, the number one is not the only decision, but the number one decision is like, who's my starter at small forward if all of my options are available? And I think, you know, you could mull over like a lot of guys, but I think it really comes down to three, and that's Marcus Smart, Vince Williams Jr., and Jalen Wells. I do think it's notable that, you know, they shifted Jalen Wells over to the three and kept him in the starting lineup when Santi Aldama had been starting at the three. And on one hand, if you look at Jalen Wells, of those three guys, Jalen, Vince, and Marcus, Jalen is the tallest and he's the most talented shooter. So it seems like exactly what they need, right? And he's proven to be, you know, adept defensively. I don't think he's a defender on the level of Marcus Smart or Vince Williams, but he sort of held his own defensively. And so in some ways, that seems like exactly who they want, and maybe they'll stick with that. I just wonder about, as the matchups accumulate, I wonder about how well his defense will really hold up relative to those other two guys. And also, if Zach Edey ends up settling as starting center at some point, which I think he will, do you really want to be starting two rookies on a team that has aspirations to compete in the playoffs?
Yeah, I find it fascinating. So obviously, you know, Jaren's in the starting lineup, and then Pippen's in subbing for Ja, and Bane is in. So those are set. Now you've had Brandon Clark starting the last two. Do you think that is a you think Zach Edey will ultimately shift back into the starting lineup? The Clark thing
is
permanent.
I think Zach Edey long term is going to be the starting center on this team, and I think that will happen this season. I think he's playing with different lineups, playing with different stuff. Maybe he's trying to get Brandon Clark going. Zach Edey's minutes have not diminished going to the bench, you know, so I don't think it's been a big deal.
Right.
And now he's got the turned ankle, so I mean, maybe, who knows, you know, it may be a few weeks or whatever. We'll see. But I think the way this is headed ultimately will be with Zach Edey as the starting center of this team, and I think that eventually will be this season. Yeah.
Yeah, so Wells is the interesting question, as you identify, and it's kind of stunning to think that he would be starting over Marcus Smart and Vince Williams. He's a second-round pick from a draft that wasn't supposed to be good. Honestly, it might be stunning if he were a lottery pick. And he's a second-round pick in this draft, and he is starting over Smart and Vince. Now, obviously, they are both working their way back. And then Vince in particular, he shot well last year, but that was always the question. And he hasn't shot well since he's been back. That may come. I don't know. Is there?
Yeah, I mean, Vince Williams just played 38 minutes.
Right.
Coming off an injury. Not only coming off an injury, but he missed all of preseason training camp, and he missed the last month of last season. So he had not actually played an NBA game since March. So, I mean, I think he's clearly working his way back into shape.
Right.
Now, to your point, and I've made this point before, even when he works his way back into game shape, that doesn't guarantee what kind of shooter he's going to be. And so, I think Vince Williams is still the ultimate best answer to this, more than likely. But I don't think this necessarily you put him there back there right now. I think maybe you give it time and let him sort of round back into shape a little bit.
And then the whole question with Marcus Smart would be whether he would happily accept. I mean, you know, whatever, he doesn't have that much choice, but
right.
There was this question of whether you had to, out of deference to his status in the league, whether he had to be the starter. You don't imagine, it's sort of, he must look up and think, Jaden Wells is starting ahead of me. Like, I don't know. It's a puzzle. So if you have a healthy lineup, which we may never have, but let's say you have a healthy lineup, then you've got, and I presume, so you think that ultimately it will be Edie and Vince Williams starting alongside the other three? I guess that's what you would imagine.
I think it will ultimately be Edie. I think Vince Williams will, my guess is he will be the best option. That's different from the option they choose. I don't know what option they're going to choose.
All right, let's say they choose Wells. So then, coming off the bench, you've got Brandon Clark, you've got Vince, you've got Marcus Smart, you've got Santi. That gets you. You got Brandon Clark. That gets you to 10. So Laravia and Huff, basically 11.
You said Clark twice, and that got you to 9. But you still had Pippen.
Pippen gets you to 10. Yeah. Because Pippen,
and then you have Kennard and Laravia, and so I do think that is sort of most likely. Like Kennard and Laravia are the guys on the fringes of that.
And Huff too. But, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think Huff is a step below. I know Huff has been lots of fun. Has put up really good numbers. The team has not been good at his minutes. So I think there's going to be an awareness that his role is the fifth big, and like he steps in like he did last night. He didn't play until Zach Edey got hurt, and then he stepped into that role, right? So I think Huff is going to be the fifth big and not a normal rotation guy if you're healthy. That is my belief. So I put Huff and Conchar sort of on the tier below Laravia and Kennard in this question. But, like, you know, you're losing a lot of shooting if Kennard's out of the mix. You're losing, like, some size and activity with Laravia's out of the mix. I think there's all kinds of questions there. One of those is, like, are you playing Scottie Pippen and Marcus Smart? Like, is there a chance that, like, Pippen sort of drifts out, you know, because if you have Smart, Ja, and Bane, right? And there's the question of, like, if Laravia is out playing Aldama, like, are you going to keep playing Aldama? You know, I think there's all kinds of questions there. But I think the key thing is, one of the things you said at the start of this is, like, we have this theoretical discussion about if everyone's healthy, but how many games are you going to have when everyone's healthy? Like, none.
Right. Well, is there some advantage? Of course, you would like good health. The lack of continuity has not been anyone's fault at this point because it's
the key for the Grizzlies is to get Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson all healthy, right? If you have those three guys healthy, and then like at that point, like it's fine if you have three guys out every game. If those three guys do not include Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson, like you know, it almost might be preferable, frankly. Then you don't even have these questions. Just like have those three guys. And give me like six or seven other guys on the roster. You can almost pick whichever six or seven you want. You know,
is there some? I think that's true. That if you have those three, that is the continuity you need too. Like there is some advantage to continuity. The fact that it's constantly changing can't be a good thing. Like I mean, you know, like in the end, you do want to have some sense of things. I imagine. But the continuity comes with those three being healthy, and then the parts just fit around them, however. I guess. All right, so the Grizzlies now sit at 8-6. They are in a three-way tie at 8-6 with Minnesota and Sacramento. It's interesting, though, as you pointed out, like someone's going to be at 11 and unhappy, and right now it's Dallas and the Clippers tied at 11. It's just a jumble. Thoughts on what we're seeing there?
Yeah, it's going to be a jumble. And, you know, it'll separate out to some degree, I suspect, over time, but that's not guaranteed. I think the next 2 weeks, it's time even without Morant, and we'll see him. He sort of alluded to being back early at some point last night. But I don't think that's going to be like, you know, tomorrow.
We're losing Chris. We lost Chris.
Wins,
oh, sorry.
You know?
We do, I'm sorry, you said, but you don't think it's going to be like tomorrow. We missed you. You think it's what you're going to say?
Yeah, I think whenever Morant's back, it's not going to be like tomorrow night, right? And so I think the next 2 weeks, the way the schedule's set up, it's time to stack some wins and get some distance from 500. You know, who knows if Jokic is going to play Tuesday. Even if he does, you're at home against that team. We've seen all what right. the rest of that team looks like. It's not great. You know, Philly is still a mess coming in. Who knows who's going to play with them? You got New Orleans, who's a mess next week. You've got, I think you've got a Chicago game. You got a Detroit game in there. You know, I think the next 2 weeks is lots of winnable games before it toughens up again. So I think the Grizzlies need to come out of that with like some breathing room above 500.
Well, and if you're looking up, you got Golden State at 10, and you're sort of losing touch a little bit with Golden State and Oklahoma City. But honestly, Houston's 10-4. The Lakers are 9-4. The Phoenix is 9-5. Like, if you don't start stacking wins, you'll start losing touch with, you know, with that group as well. And then Minnesota and Dallas will have to figure it out.
I don't. Oklahoma City is one thing, but yes. And even without Holmgren. But the rest of it, I just, you know, Phoenix has lost 3 in a row now.
Right.
I think the Lakers have had great health. I don't know if that's going to continue.
Denver's kind of a
Houston,
mess.
I think it's
thin.
I think Houston's playing above their heads a little bit. I think Golden State's legit, but I don't think they're going to keep winning at this pace. So, yeah, we'll see.
All right, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks. It's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. It's just kind of astounding, isn't it, to see Wells sticking in the light. Second-round pick in a bad draft. Vince is back.
I do
Marcus
think Chris,
is back.
I think Chris touched on something, though. It's the he was there for training camp, whatnot. It's almost like,
but it's also the need of it's how he fits into that
sure.
into that
shooting,
group, which
yeah.
doesn't have enough shooting to begin with. And he's turned out to be a credible defender, and he can shoot. Like if right now you swing the ball to Vince Williams, Marcus Smart, or Wells, who do you want taking the shot?
Probably Wells.
Yeah. Which is just
now, who would take the shot? Probably Marcus Smart.
Wells. Oh well, they both. Either of those two would. Either of those two would. Marcus Smart may never get. If he were on there with Wells, would never get to Wells. So anyway, there you go. I don't know how to feel about the Grizzlies season.
I think the way that I feel is that they've not stubbed their toe when I think it was possible for them to stub their toe given the injuries. The thing I think that makes it complicated of how do you feel is because, well, you kind of want to see what Ja looks like when he comes back.
Well, I'm assuming he's going to be great when he comes back. I guess I feel pretty good about it. I just feel the muddle along the way till they get healthy is a little frustrating, right? You would have loved to seen Ja over the weekend twice. And so we don't get to see them at their peak, what they can become, even as you look around and it feels like the pieces are as good or better than we could have hoped. Jaren's been great. Dez is, you know, working his way back. Now Vince Williams is coming back and Marcus is coming back and Kennard, you know, we had to get Kennard back too. Like everyone's coming back. Everyone looks like what basically look like they're supposed to look with the possible exception of Brandon Clark. And so if you can have Dez, Jaren, and Ja together and then some collection of these pieces around them, I think you're looking at, you know, a team that's probably top four in the West. But I'm not saying they'll finish there because of what they're dealing with now.
Yeah, I'm with Chris, though. It's kind of time to start stacking some wins.
Time to start stacking some wins.
Because Embiid's going to likely be out again. You know, again, we want to stress, we need Jokic to get healthy.
It is funny how it works. Like, you do say, like, the Grizzlies are, they catch some breaks because they're playing these teams without their best players. But all the teams that are playing them are catching
correct.
Breaks
because
they're
not playing
the Grizzlies without their best players. Have you seen a study about it? It simply can't be that it used to be like this. I just don't remember from my youth every single night it felt like superstars was out. It felt like I saw Larry Bird play. I saw Magic play. I saw Scottie play. Jordan play. I saw, you know, Hakeem play. It didn't feel like every day was up in the air as to whether some guy was going to be healthy or not.
I mean, to me, it's one of the other things. Like, it's another hat tip to LeBron. I mean, the guy plays.
Oh my God! Yeah, absolutely. All right. It's holiday season is upon us. I hear Christmas music now everywhere I go, and I don't even mind it. Don't even mind it. And I am in the festive season. My kids are going to come home for Thanksgiving. And then I'm going to ask them what they want, and then I'm going to go directly to O'Call. Because this is true. If you I'll just speak this as a dad. I've gotten a lot of gifts where you open it and you go like, oh, that's really nice. It's just, it's the nature of being a dad. That has never happened and will not happen if you shop at O'Call, because the stuff is absolutely staggeringly great and beautiful. And you know, when you reach into your closet or your dresser or whatever else, and you pull out a piece of clothing that you love, it's just, it as they say, Jeffrey, it sparks joy. And if it was a gift, here's the other thing. You remember who gave it to you. Whenever you put that on, you remember who gave it to you. It gives you delight, makes you feel better about yourself. And I'll call the clothes are absolutely stunning. They're going to have the elves in there again shortly. They have college kids who are back for the summer who do the wrapping there. It's like Santa's workshop, only with beautiful clothes. And the elves there they've been working there for years, all of them, and they have your best interest at heart. They know how to make you look spectacular. No better place to go this holiday season than our friends at O'Call. And do not give up hope, Tennessee fans. You can still, by the way, get your quarter zips or hoodies in collegiate colors. Tennessee, Memphis, Ole Miss, Alabama, Arkansas. Great time to go. No better time, really, than to go see our friends at O'Call. Jeffy, there was a football game yesterday that got some attention. Oh, yeah. The Bills won. Woohoo! Talk about that, the NFL, and more when we return. 92.9 FM ESPN.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Jeff Calkins Show. We didn't play it during the fight song roundup, but that's the Buffalo Bills fight song, sort of. It's not really. They don't
shout.
They
maybe
don't play it anymore. They play shout now. Yeah, that was from the 70s and 80s. Yeah, interesting day in the NFL yesterday, and the headliner, not just because I'm a Bills fan, but the headliner was the titanic struggle between the Bills and the Chiefs, and Josh Allen on 4th and 2, keeping in himself, rumbling and stumbling for the touchdown, Jeffrey. That was clearly, you called it his MVP moment.
I think when you're going to go back, like that highlight, if he keeps playing football the way that he is, like, to me, it's like the Ravens are going to have a long shot to even win the division now, because they're now.
The thing is, though, it is a, I don't know if you know this, it's a long season.
It is a long season, and like we always wanted to declare an MVP.
We just saw Electric Lamar,
yep,
against the Bengals, and that was going to be his MVP performance, right? Where they, like, he was sensational. Now, he was not sensational yesterday.
And the problem is the Bengals are probably not going to be a part of the story. Does anyone believe that the Chiefs are not going to be a part of the story?
I mean, if the Bills continue to win and Josh continues to play at a high level, right now he is the favorite for MVP. That's pretty clear, right?
Yes.
Literally based on – it flipped. It flipped based on what happened yesterday.
Yeah.
And it just in the grand scheme of things, I sound like such a homer in all of this. He should get one MVP before Lamar gets three. You know,
yes,
what I mean? Like,
it's kind of like the – Jokic Embiid thing that we went through.
Yeah, it's just like if you want to call them equivalent quarterbacks, you can. It's very clear. Patrick Mahomes is on one level. I'm not saying he's on one level this year, but as a career, Patrick Mahomes is on one level. And then there's another level, and it's Burrow, who is on this dysfunctional team that can't get out of its own way and win games, and Lamar and Josh Allen. And I think of the three, Josh Allen's the best.
Well, and this was supposed to be the quote-unquote reset year.
This is supposed to be the year where they took the big hit to get rid of Stephon Diggs. By the way, who looks good in that exchange right now? Stephon Diggs.
Shout out Curtis Samuel yesterday. I thought he was awesome.
I thought it's been interesting because as they lose Diggs, the plan for replacing him was
committee.
Curtis Samuel, Keon
Shakir.
Coleman. Shakir was there,
yeah,
so it wasn't really. But the newcomers,
yeah,
were Samuel and Keon Coleman and Mac Hollins. Like,
yes,
that was the Marcus Vandis, Evaldo Scandling was on at one point too, but he's gone. So, but it was that. It was Keon Coleman and but the free agency gambit was Curtis Samuel, and he's done nothing until yesterday. There is a thought that he had been hurt. like that he's been
definitely
active.
Looked like he had a different gear
yesterday. Different juice than he has all year long. Like he was really good yesterday, so that will help. They're obviously without Dalton Kincaid, they're without Coleman, so they were
and Cooper's been good when he's been healthy.
Oh, Cooper's been unbelievable when he's been healthy. Like he made that one-handed catch
is insane,
ridiculous.
The toe tap by the sideline.
So, like it is a for a Bills fan. Like that's I was talking about this at the beginning of the show. Like fandom is this emotional thing, and it's so depressing when your team loses. I was thinking about Tennessee fans, and it's so unbelievably. I don't know how you can explain why it does this to our emotions when they win. But for someone from Buffalo to see the scene, the pregame shows there. Josh is great. Like every
towers going through tables.
Yeah, the whole thing's magnificent. I mean, how do you like? Except for the fact that then in the end, and I was just exchanging tweets with a Kansas City fan. She said, "Great, you can win in the regular season again. We'll be in the postseason again." Like there's nothing to be said about that. That's not an indictment, by the way, of Josh Allen, who had beaten Patrick Mahomes with 13 seconds left in the game, and so it's not. Anything Josh hasn't done against Mahomes and the Chiefs. It's the failure of the Bills in the postseason broadly. And let's be honest, Sean McDermott, one of the points that they were making on Unsportsmanlike this morning is if you look at the teams right now, and I don't trash Sean McDermott like a lot of people do. I don't think he's a disastrously bad coach.
He's won a heck of a lot of football games.
Totally dysfunctional organization and has made it like one of the elite teams over the last 5 to 7 years. Like it's won a hell of a lot of football games. And in the regular season, I think Andy Reid is trying to win those games against Sean McDermott, and Sean McDermott has won 3 of 4.
Yes.
Right? So you don't do that if you're a moron. But when you're talking about the playoffs and the elite teams in the AFC right now, and you're looking at Andy Reid, you're looking at the two Harbaughs, if you're counting them, and you're looking at Mike Tomlin, and then you're looking at the Bills, there is a clear one of those coaches does not belong.
Right.
And that's not because he's not good.
And he doesn't belong until he does.
You don't belong until you do. The two Harbaughs have proven it.
Yep.
Andy Reid has certainly proven it. Mike Tomlin has certainly proven it. And Sean McDermott has not.
Yes.
And so they were making the point he's going to have to overcome the coaching deficit. And who knows whether there will be in any given game a coaching deficit. Like, did Andy Reid out-coach Sean McDermott yesterday?
No,
he didn't feel like it? Didn't feel like it?
No, the thing that was amazing about that game yesterday is, like, it felt like the right team won.
Yeah, and it also felt like if one or two plays, if they'd made the stop on 4th and 2.
Sure.
Right, if Chris Jones had made the stop on 4th and 2.
But see, I guess that's the way I look at it. I thought he pushed the right buttons yesterday.
Oh, I did too. I thought they uncorked two long touchdown drives. The defense, by the way, they're going to have Milano back, who's their best linebacker. He's like, well, they're not healthy yet on defense or offense. But in the end,
they had 259 yards.
Yeah, to hold them to 259 yards. They also, by the way, there has been in Spagnuolo's career, there's only been two games where they did not get a sack, went an entire game without being sacked by Kansas City's defense. Both of those games were against the Bills. And it's because
there seems to be a common denominator.
It's because Josh Allen can do what he does. It doesn't mean he's not going to get sacked. He doesn't. He still threw a bad pick. Like, that was a bad pick. But
yeah, but it is funny how it's like, he throws that pick,
and it's like an indictment of everything.
And it's like, it's like, did everyone forget the first quarter when Mahomes just throws like straight into double coverage?
People, his picks count triple kicks.
Yes,
like,
it's
for some reason in people's memories, his picks count more than anyone else's picks. But on 40 dropbacks, did not take a single sack. The offensive line was terrific. So Bills win that one, but it won't matter unless they beat him in the playoffs. And here's the truth. Everyone is talking about how it's true. Now the Bills have the tiebreaker over the Chiefs. So if the Bills can go the rest of the way, can win one more game than the Chiefs, they would have the advantage. The problem is, you look at the Bills' schedule, I just don't believe they're going to do it. They play at Detroit for example. You know, like,
although the Niners game seems much more manageable than you would have thought
Niners
at the beginning.
Game seems more manageable. They got a bye, and then the Niners game. But they have a tougher schedule than Kansas City going down the stretch.
Yes,
Kansas
absolutely.
City has the Steelers, but the Bills have a tougher schedule. I don't believe if they beat Kansas City. And by the way, I'm not saying they'll even get to play Kansas City. I think the Ravens. I'll tell you who gets if the Bills, I think, are graded on on people that are reluctant to give them credit, people give the Ravens more credit than they freaking deserve all the time.
And I don't understand it.
They're going to be a wild card team.
The standard we apply to the Bills is the standard that we should apply to the Ravens. And I don't understand it because the Ravens have way fewer playoff wins with Lamar than Josh does with the Bills.
Again, Lamar's record in the playoffs, I think it's 6 touchdowns, 6 interceptions.
And only on top of that, it's like, I think he has 2 wins.
Yeah. So it's, and then.
But the thing that makes no sense to me, it's like, I feel like every single year you can set your clock to it. We are going to crown the Ravens at some point
in the season. They will be considered the best
team. And inevitably they lose. And we don't ever like.
Here's the thing though. If they played the Steelers again tomorrow, wouldn't you pick the Ravens?
I don't know. Lamar has a real problem against them because they have a very athletic defensive front and they can keep him bottled up more so than anyone else can.
He does. He absolutely. You're absolutely
because they're,
right.
They're very athletic and fast up front. And so they, like, if you can tell, like, and honestly, that was what Cincinnati did for 3 quarters and then they fell apart. But it's starting to kind of get to where everyone's like, all right, we need to make him stay in the pocket, beat us from the pocket, tip your cap if he can do it. And, well, he's starting to look like he does almost every – he's rounding into playoff form.
He was only sacked twice by the Steelers for a total of 2 lost yards. But under pressure, he was 4 of 13 for 34 yards when he was under pressure. It felt like, though, this was turnovers, and then it was – Justin Tucker is becoming mortal.
Well, I mean, that's
Justin
that's
Tucker
a,
is becoming
a
mortal. That's a.
I don't know if he's becoming mortal. It's like he's becoming like a liability to a certain degree.
1 of 3 yesterday.
I mean, I think he has the most misses of any kicker right now.
Was Justin Tucker. So there you go. But you know what? The Chargers last night, like Chargers come in as a wild card team, could go to Buffalo and beat the Bills too. Like they look good.
They did, but they also they got let off the hook because they chargered it. And I know everyone's trying to do the Harbaugh has changed everything. Harbaugh didn't change anything. McPherson missed 2 kicks. Like in the end, like you blew an 18-point lead.
The old Chargers would have lost that game, Jeffrey.
Well, no, I just think the Bengals are like the unstoppable force this year against the immovable object. Someone had to win.
What was the stat you had about
career games? With 300 or more passing yards, at least 3 touchdowns, no interceptions.
300 or more passing yards, at least 3 touchdowns, and
no picks.
That's a hell of a game for a quarterback. Yeah.
Joe Burrow has lost 3 games this year.
Oh, my God.
With those statistics. Tom Brady, for his entire career, lost twice.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. That's an unbelievable statistic. What else struck you yesterday? Obviously, we got the news from the Giants.
Yeah.
The news from the Giants is that...
they were just making sure they don't have to pay Daniel. Because if Daniel gets hurt... It's the same thing the Raiders did with Carr.
They benched Daniel Jones. DeVito is now going to take over.
Yeah. Hey.
And this sets up a...
Get ready for next Thursday,
y'all. Thanksgiving is going to be electric.
Cooper Rush versus Tommy DeVito live on Fox.
Oh, my God.
With
Tom Brady on the call. So we'll have that. But it's because there was a injury guarantee for 25 with Daniel Jones. If he gets hurt, you would be on the hook for, I think, $25 million guaranteed. And so they're going to move on from Daniel Jones, obviously, at this point. And they didn't want to be boxed into having to pay him. But it does mean it's just you're just playing out. Not that you weren't already. You were already playing out the string.
100%.
But you are playing out the string.
They're not even going to Drew Lock. They're going to Tommy DeVito.
Now, you got the Jags.
I can't believe he hasn't been fired yet. That was the quick game. Like I the Lions are an animal, and everyone knows how I feel about the Lions, but that was a quit game.
The Jags are 2-8. Now, mind you, you got Mac Jones as your quarterback.
Correct.
Like, whatever. The Giants were supposed to win that game.
The Lions.
I'm sorry. Yes. We're supposed to win that game. But it's just...
They scored 7 touchdowns on their first seven possessions.
And this is a team that, by the way, like, that defense against Minnesota was good. So
yes.
That's why you know it's quitting.
Correct.
Obviously, the Jacksonville has had its struggles, but they have had some very fine games. 7 touchdowns on their first 7 possessions. The last team to do that in the regular season, the 2017 Patriots, who did it over my beloved Buffalo Bills, 56-10. Bills, by the way, then did that against the Pats in the 2021 postseason, although there was actually a 0-play drive at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
When it fielded a kickoff.
Yeah.
So technically they didn't, but otherwise they did. Their 7 drives, 7 touchdowns. They did that in the playoffs to the Pats. The Pats had done it to them 17 years ago. So it was something else. Jared Goff, absolutely a get-right game for him. 24-29, 412 yards, 4 touchdowns. Hendon Hooker even got into the action. See that?
Yes, I did.
Hendon Hooker got into the action.
Dan Campbell's also, like, taking souls right now. Like, they are not letting their foot off the gas. Like, there's no such thing as, all right, we've got enough points, let's get out of here. They're just continuing to run their offense.
And then you've got, it's just the divide. There's just a bunch of hopeless situations right now. You know, Tennessee feels hopeless. And then teams that just...
Yeah, I credit the Titans for at least, like, I think they probably should have done it sooner, but I get what they're doing. They've at least finally acknowledged, like, we've got to tear it down. Which is a tough thing to admit.
Right.
And they've at least done that. I think the other big story, though, for me is, like, what's up with the Niners? Like, Christian McCaffrey's back. Like, they had, like, I know Ayuk's not out there, but, like, they had
the guy. On the Unsportsmanlike show that precedes ours, they said, and I want to see if you believe this, that the window is closed for that Niners team. I think my own view is that people are really... People
we're
like, really
we're
people
obsessed
love
with closing
windows.
Yeah,
like,
we're obsessed
with it. The Bills
it.
Window was closed.
Yeah.
The Warriors window was closed. We love closing windows on teams, just like we love telling people to run, they retire, they should whatever else. People could, and so I think it's unfair to say their window has closed. I think you can have a bad year, and obviously what's happened, they're gonna have to play Purdy or not.
Yes.
They're either gonna have to pay him, in which case it's gonna be harder to build an effective team around him, or they're gonna have to let him walk, which is not ideal either. And so so the window will be harder to sustain, but the Bills' window wasn't closed.
But also,
again, I don't think they may never win a Super Bowl, but the Bills' window wasn't closed. I don't think the 49, this could just be a bad year.
It also, when you close the window, it also dismisses the possibility of retooling. And one thing the Niners have done under Lynch and Kyle is they've retooled very nicely. Like, they've gone to the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo and Brock Purdy. Like, they've been able to kind of navigate and figure it out. I don't even necessarily think it's, quote-unquote, the window's closed. They just kind of look broken. Like, because I don't even think Purdy's playing badly. It's not like, oh, they're not winning because Brock's not very good. Brock's been pretty good this year. It's just you're used to seeing them when they go for the knockout punch. They used to be able to land it. It felt like every game. This year, it just feels like they leave teams in the game way too long.
So Bears lose again.
That was a new one.
Criticism is...
Not running. They could have run another play. They were in complete control of the clock, and they could have gotten a closer field goal. Correct.
But it was not an unhittable field goal.
No, it was like 42, something like that.
Is that a fair criticism?
I think the problem is Eberflus has given you so much to criticize. Like, you can just add it on, but... Like, did I think it was a little weird that they weren't trying to move the football? That's fine, but what happens if they run the football and they fumble?
No, I get it from the 19, I get it.
Yeah.
But it's go ahead and get it 7 yards closer.
Like, but then if they fumble, we're sitting there killing him. Why didn't you just, you had a chance maybe to kick a field goal?
Redraft the rookie quarterbacks.
So this is my other big deal. And, like, I think Caleb's personality makes people want to declare him a bust sooner rather than later. I, in my heart of hearts, believe this. If Jaden Daniels were on the Bears, Jaden would be going through the same thing that Caleb is. I think it is an organizational problem. I think it's an organizational failure. And then yesterday, when they did make the offensive change, they looked better. Does this mean that he looks like he's going to be one of the three best quarterbacks in the world? Like, no, but he's also, what, this is game 10, game 9, and you're already on your second offensive coordinator?
Okay, but redraft the rookie quarterbacks.
Well, I mean, I think everybody would also go Jaden 1.
Jaden would clearly be one. The question is I mean, honestly, Bo Nix was really
good. Yeah, I'm still.
And Drake May.
Drake, I think, is actually in. Drake has been thrust into the worst spot, and I think he has acclimated himself the best because, like, their offensive line's terrible. He doesn't have anyone to throw to, and he's still kind of
that's
respectable.
True, by the way. Same things.
Correct.
Same things that you would say about, and he doesn't.
I still, like, that's the other thing about Jaden. Like, I think Jaden's hurt. Why is Jaden hurt? Because Jaden's slight. Like, he's got hurt ribs, and, like, he can't throw. So it's like when Jaden's, like, I do factor all of this in. Like, I still think that if you would have said, I have to make the draft again, I think I'm still taking Caleb Williams.
Really?
Yes.
Number one.
I still think he is the most gifted of them all. And I also think if you would have put Caleb with Cliff Kingsbury, I think Caleb's having a pretty good year.
How about your Jets?
I know how about my Jets?
I know you loved them coming into the year.
Man, how'd they lose again?
It's just fantastic. It's just fantastic.
Well, then there's the weird Anthony Richardson part of it. Now, I'm also in this camp. I think we need to reevaluate when we sit somebody down, particularly a young quarterback. We need to reevaluate and act like this isn't the end of the world.
Right. Because well, I actually think that's happening now.
Bryce looked a lot better.
What you've seen this, normally to get the second chance, you've got to be benched at one place and go on to a next place.
Yes.
Now maybe this new thing is happening where you can take a seat at your place. You're not buried forever. You learn. You take a deep breath. Whatever else, you come back, and it can be part of the process.
Because what was the stat? Like, Troy Aikman was benched like 6 times his rookie year. Now, granted, they were horrible.
Right.
But, like, this idea that, like, Bryce Young has looked much better since he got benched and came back in. And Richardson's always been kind of boom or bust. But, like, it's not the end of somebody. Like, you're going to kill his confidence. Like, sometimes you need to sit on the sideline and watch somebody else fail, and you go, oh, it's not just me.
Right. And then we had the fight, which we have not mentioned. Jake Paul, Mike Tyson. By all accounts, it was the most boring fight ever. And then the other thing that happened is Netflix had lots of issues.
Yes, and so now everybody's
Netflix
saying
is worried about Christmas because at Christmas you're going to have NFL games on Netflix. Can they handle it? And by the way, Beyonce's performing at halftime.
Correct.
On Christmas, can they handle that? It is interesting. I went down a rabbit hole last night. There are people who put out video of Tyson sparring before the fight.
Yeah.
Right? And where he looks quick and good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it's
best
like
shape of his life.
So he was paid to lose,
yes.
Basically. Well, we didn't see this, Mike. He was paid to lose. Looked like a 58-year-old guy.
I was going to say, from the highlights I saw, it's like, I don't think that was taking a fall, because if that would have been the case, you would have heard much more uproar from Vegas and gambling.
I think that lots of people, like, yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think lots of people acknowledge that is the best you can say for this is good for Mike for getting the payday. Like, people
yes.
now, whatever you've thought about Mike Tyson, people now like Mike Tyson.
He's
I agree. Think? Fundamentally.
I think he is. I think also, though, he's become likable because he kind of has owned up to, like, what he did in his past. Like, he's been pretty.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff
sure.
in there. There's, you know, Kobe had sexual assault
yes.
allegations. Tyson has sexual assault allegations. But people certainly remember him as the baddest man in the planet.
Like, last night, ESPN during Sunday Night Football, they just ran Mike Tyson's greatest hits.
Right. It was just, you remember how, even if you weren't alive to see it, you watch it and it's devastating. And he's become sort of endearingly weird and you know, so.
He's done like the one man show.
Yeah. So people sort of like Mike. And so the best you can say of this, the worst thing that happened is that Jake Paul got richer off of it. But
there's also, I don't know, man, like at a certain level, I just tip my cap to them. Like they're unbelievable at making money.
They are unbelievable at make money, and they did make money for Mike.
Yes.
Which is fine. Like, and again, who are we to say, just like who am I to say that Tua should be retired? Yes. Who am I to say whatever? Who am I to say that Mike Tyson can't go out there and walk around the ring and...
And we got to, listen, we got to go down memory lane.
And we got to see all this, the best stuff highlights.
Yes. Right.
It does not, by the way, diminish him in your memory. I've never bought that. If you just see someone recently staggering around, people always use the Willie Mays example. He was a sad baseball player at the end. People who saw Willie at his zenith, remember? I don't remember Joe Montana playing for the Chiefs, you know?
Yeah.
I remember Joe Montana throwing it to Dwight Clark.
I do remember Joe Montana playing for the Chiefs.
I remember
he actually got him to the playoffs.
He did get him to the playoffs where they lost to the Bills. I remember him throwing that touchdown pass to Dwight Clark. I remember being terrified in the same way that you were terrified now if Patrick Mahomes gets the ball with 2 minutes left.
Yes.
You were terrified that you were going to lose. You knew you were going to lose.
Yes. It's also why I thought McDermott made the right call going for it on fourth down.
Oh, he would have been buried if he hadn't.
And everybody knew what was going to happen
would
if they got the ball back.
Would every coach have gone for it in fourth and two?
Not
in
everyone.
That situation?
There's a lot of coaches that coach not to lose.
Of course, everyone didn't have Josh Allen either.
Correct.
And Josh Allen knew he was going to run with that damn ball. Like
he knew when he got fooled because he thought it was going to be man. They ran the motion. They thought it was going to be man.
They ran the exact same play earlier, and they got man, and he threw a completion to Curtis Samuel. So they did the mesh again, and this time...
And that was the one he also threw the pick on, because they did the same thing, where they fooled him,
and he threw
it up to Dawson, and then Dawson ran zone.
And the reason, by the way, you knew this game means more, he kept saying it didn't mean more, of course it means more, is how much he runs the ball. In the games that really mean something, he's a truck. You know, look at the Steelers last the playoffs last year. In the games that mean something, he's willing to do anything to win. Other games, he doesn't feel like he has to. Leaders Credit Union would be the place to go if you want a new financial institution. That's where Claire and I went. We went out to the Bartlett branch. They got a new branch opening in Arlington. Leaders is a credit union, so it exists purely for the benefit of its members. There's no corporate overlords that have to be paid. All the money gets poured back into better technology, better rates, better services. Check them out at leaderscu.com/ESPN for more details. What's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. They will have Dane Bradshaw to talk about their former coach, Coach Tippett, as we have mentioned as well. Herd's going to join me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. We'll have Jason Munns with us. I would say Cobb is going to be on Gabe, but Cobb's heading into the hospital right now with his wife.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back tomorrow. For now, our work is done.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.